This is the audio edition of Touchstone, produced by Poetry Society of New Hampshire, psnh.org.
Jessica Purdy reading Sand and Soap. When asked where I go to let go, I think of sand my dad sweeps into the cracks of old bricks in a patio patterned by his hand. Indoors, he vacuums the beach our feet bring with us. The salt on our skin we rinse in the outdoor shower he built. Our soap foams onto the patio bricks and sinks deep under the house, and we step into our sandals and pin our swimsuits to the clothesline he hid behind the lattice. The wet skin of them drips down where rabbits go to chew grass and thistle, and pink wild roses and honeysuckle clamber over the gray wood below the white gutter. Metallic when a crow's claws click home, stick the landing. Every aspect of the bird shines black against the sky. A blue I have never let go of, and when my mother says they are in their last chapter, I cannot close this book made of sand, neither can I keep it from trickling between my fingers.
This is Josh Nicolaisen reading my poem Torn and Soft. I wanted to see those hogs die, I wanted to stare death in his old eye. But my reticence pulled the blinds the morning the pig executioner came. On that blood-gray day, he wore blue canvas coveralls and worked with tools I never saw. In torn denim and soft flannel, I was sent inside, where I went alone to my room, to a window. A window where I could have watched the whole event, a window frame to which I once nailed my own finger. I watched the man begin his age-old work for a moment before pulling the drawstring, turning my back on the uncomfortable thing. Mesmerized, I waited in dead air for the bangs. I cried as they rang. This is Josh Nicolaisen reading my poem, If Just Then. I stood in the middle of our dirt road and stared up into a white pine's branches where, alone, a red squirrel sang and danced, pinecone in paw, little mosh redding the sappy snack, and it made everything sad disappear, and wonder took over. Wrapped in an everyday creature, a mundane act, I thought, why not enjoy this stillness? After all, the hayloft is full, the wood is stacked, and inside of this skin, a type of man I'm forever trying to understand. There is someone there, and now I hear him whispering, this sky, this branch, this is all there is, right here. Stop searching.
This is Liz All, and this is my poem, Lifespans. One swallowtail keeps dragging the dark kite of her shadow back to the lilac bush, even though it's mostly burnt out now, all its humid scent stolen by the ever-widening splay of daylight towards solstice. She's got a month, at most, to sip whatever she can find and leave a clutch of eggs on the cool underside of a leaf. The yellow tatter of her persistence at the corner of my eye all morning, a flicker that I won't let me be.
Braided Lives by Mona Anderson. This child who graces the wet grass in teal slicker and matching rain boots, eyes crinkled, mouth on the verge, holds out to me in cupped hands a neon orange newt, as if it's melting orange sherbet. I kneel down to solemnly accept her offering as she bursts into squeals, then runs to catch the cat. Her gift tickles my hand before it slithers into the grass, and I follow as I always will.
This Year's Model by Michael Milburn. Personality is a puzzle when you're addressed by another. In this case, I am told, her mother. But the toddler running riot through the daycare yard in a purple skirt and t-shirt with a crossbred zebra giraffe painted on, a hat with a brim as broad as a platypus's bill and hexagonal glasses, looks like herself. The same tottering, grinning, fallen ball simpleton I visit on Sundays. Fashion experts say, speaks of, for, and through us. And while I know her outfits and adults' ventriloquism of whom she sees or wants to see her daughter as, if this kid could do more than babble, she'd agree that the charm of the getup and the charm of the girl are met in mutual appeal. If clothes translate a body into a look, how lucky that one unempowered with words can so eloquently wear herself out.
Basement Children by Susan Zeely. The plum job had an underbelly. I must descend into the dark school basement. But now, excused from class, steering the cart of empty milk crates down the polished river of hallway, I drink in the stairs. Students marooned at desks, balancing their pencils. I, the laureled one, freely passing by their lives, lives confined, sunk in boredom and elementary envy. But then, I must carry each crate by crate, stair by stair, weighed down into the netherworld. The air moist with the smell of damp cotton accidents, pants, skirts hanging, each metal radiator a drying rack, gray string mop and gray bucket standing at attention by the door where Mrs. Sherwood shepherds her cloistered flock of unfortunates to the lavatory with the broken tile floor under the yellow cellar bulbs. Drooly mouths gaping, legs lagging, heads hunched, they process. A stocky girl with blonde curls greets me, smiling, grunting, one dark eye seeming to see me. My mouth, I swear, tries to smile. I stammer something, nothing, closing my eyes to her, the purgatorial lost. Drop the milk crates in a corner, flee for the light. A grandmother now, I love a blonde girl with an enlarged head who cannot talk, who can't yet walk, whose smile casts me a crown of light. My eyes fill when her eyes find me. When I kneel down to kiss her, I kneel too to the remembrance of you, dear basement children. Forgive me, please forgive, the inability, the disability, the darkness, was me.
My name is Ronan McGuire, and this poem is called Mountains Upon Mountains. Anyway, forgiveness is a dull tool, a saw struggling to cut through wood, the blades getting all caught up inside. Punishment, instead, spends its days with its head cracked open on the staircase. My feet are in the shallow end of the outrun. There's a flickering light in my bedroom, and there's my lack of will to change the bulb. With a mattress strapped loose to the hood of my car, there's an allure to the northwest, though the restless tide in the sky would surely follow. The only thing I could draw as a child were mountains, each one larger than the last, pencil to paper until boredom hit like an avalanche. I thought I was acting. Every matinee sold out. But the stage was a burial ground, whispering, then shouting, the tales from Skid Row.
Waiting for water to boil, I read Jane Kenyon's Apple Dropping into Deep Early Snow by Amanda Russell. Heavy clouds dome the kitchen and reach in through offset windows. I rewrap the red wool scarf, a minor defense. The world is at war with itself. Out my window, cemetery gray grass blades saw through sheets of ice winter keeps trying to lay. As the kids say, scissors cuts paper, paper covers rock. Leaf-cutting ants use chemical weapons to defend gardens of fungus. Rock smashes. On which side of damnation do jays land or bombs fall? What of the branches sway? Tell me where apples still ripen. The poet was in the yard when the apple fell. She never touched it. She did not need to touch it, to bring it in, to be pricked by a barb on the vein of a feather in the wing of a bird whose shadow is, Lord, when, in which universe did we see you? And where do all things work together for good? Between my hands the jay now lands. The apple falls. The snow's as early and deep as the gavel of a judge. Lifted.
On seeing Liszt's transcription of Beethoven's Fifth Symphony for piano by Jean Ann Feldeisen. The pianist, a tall man in black suit, big hands and long fingers suited to tense and leaps all over the 88 keys, laughs at Liszt showing off. As he flawlessly sounds an entire orchestra with a blitz of fast-moving hands, pumping feet, a whir of leap and twist, the fateful four-note tattoo. Tiny trills of flute and treble, shake of pinky and thumb to make timpani rumble. Despite the percussive instrument he wields with crackerjack dazzle and slick of technique, growing peaks of tension, each surpassing the last, my ears register no loss, as memory fluently supplies the soothing oboe. Four triumphant trombones, thrill of piccolo.
Harmonium by Patrick Bradshaw. All the keys were there when I opened the lid, like the smile of an old man who has brushed his teeth every day for 100 years, but maybe skimped on flossing. I pumped the bellows and pressed a key, expecting nothing, but the leather bags breathed out their clear, reedy note. I played the only song I could there among the chiffarobes and coffee tables. The white keys were all I needed. A hymn of thanks in A minor for all the things that didn't happen. Rain and rot and termites, Parkinson's, arthritis, cancer, carpenter ants, mice, neglect, the heat death of the universe, collapsing social order, mom refusing dad's proposal. They begged me to take it home, but I left it where I found it, at the dump, in the still good section, with rain coming in.
This is Jules Jacob reading my contrapuntal poem, The Woodcarver Axe. To whittle ineffable sorrow,
a blue morpho balanced on a morel mushroom stem, or an oval trinket tray, house of orphan jewels saved for new settings. I long to carve like her, red cedar weather stations, movements sure as her hands, temperature and barometer effortless to track. She takes to woods, takes to knives, waste chiseled, remnants of burl and pin oak, grain unruly as her bell's palsy, saved for stronger days, black walnut, black locust and cherry, old-fashioned clocks, faces placed carefully, gold Roman numerals and dots, harder to decipher. To whittle ineffable sorrow, she takes to woods, takes to knives, a blue morpho balanced, waste chiseled, remnants on a morel mushroom stem of burl and pin oak, or an oval trinket tray, grain unruly as her bell's palsy, house of orphaned jewels, saved for stronger days. Saved for new settings, black walnut. I long to carve like her, black locust and cherry, red cedar weather stations, old-fashioned clocks, movements sure as her hands, faces placed carefully, temperature and barometer, gold Roman numerals and dots, effortless to track, harder to decipher.
That Invisible What by Bill Schreiber. We are meteors fallen through skylights into a bed with electric blankets in a suburban home, a bedside table and a blinking alarm clock to tell us it is always 12 a.m. Fields anywhere we look, horizons gathered like curtains at a window, the strained metal of our bridges declared unsafe. Long scars, still tender. We might get coffee and a bagel nearby. You could show me the library you went to on Saturdays. Tell me again the story, how your father fell off the roof. We can measure the height of the sky, learn the physics of what lights a hallway all night while we sleep. But there is no equation to make love a science, what burns to crave water. Together we step from a curb without looking, the small victories. A rabbit eating grass, the fledged robins from the nest by the door. As we sit, I think something could pass between us. Leave you unscarred. Beautiful. As we search for that invisible what we see through when we look long enough.
A Cup of Water by Jane Harkins. A cup of water. A village woman stands at the periphery, a jug of water balanced on one hip. She holds her daughter's hand until the young girl, bored watching the scene in front of her, pulls free to chase a lamb. The woman waits for her moment to slip between the important men uttering their prayers, slides an earthen cup from a fold in her skirt, and fills it with cool water. The new mother, mouth dry from laboring in the dusty stable, welcomes the woman's gift with outstretched hands. She pushes aside the pouch of gold, a vial of myrrh, the pungent frankincense, and pats the empty space beside her.
An Ode to Being 14 by Ezra Canterbury. I've lived in my own body like it's a haunted house. I've lived in my own body, and baby, it's a fucking tilt-a-whirl. Sleeping through my history of Hinduism lessons didn't feel like a moral failing then. There's a slide up on the board about the many arms of Ganesha that I apparently wrote. Whatever. I'm moving my mouth like it hurts to do so. The tilt-a-whirl spins. Back then, a house was a house was a home, and I could fall asleep anywhere. What's that gap in your resume, sir? Well, I was spinning. There's a point where the haunting becomes too intimate to be cumbersome. In a basement next to a cornfield with an enclosure of honest-to-God alpacas outside, I made ghosts motion sick. When you're spinning so fast and smiling when the velocity allows, the ghosts start to have your eyes.
Curtain Overtones by Kathy Twing. Nani stitched the eyelets around each opening, ray florets to light like gold when the sun shines in. Poppy played the Goldberg variations, Gould's 1981 version, the stereo volume at 20. "So loud," muttered Nani. "Must be," confided Poppy to me. "Listen." Gould hummed above the counterpoint. "He sings the overtones." And Poppy and I sang them too. Decades later, Mom asked, "Do you want anything of theirs?" "Only everything." The scent of berry jam in Nani's kitchen, the crack of Poppy's axe against the firewood, or the glint from his eye that high-fived my own shy shine. "Remember those curtains?" I asked, "with all the tiny holes? And now they hang in my kitchen. Light dances through the eyelets. In another room, you play the variations on our just-tuned piano. And in the overtones, I hear all of us sing."
Marjorie Moorhead, reading Clearing Out the House. You liked pretty things, old lace doilies, eyelet-bordered handkerchiefs, elegantly textured tablecloths. You liked sparkle in jewelry, in shaped glass bottles, fluted vases, flower pattern dainty dishes, silk scarves that billow with the slightest breeze. Pretty woman, you surrounded yourself in a decorated nest full of items that pleased your senses, things that glittered like your eyes, colors evoking garden flowers that lived outside your door, iris, peony, lupin, phlox, lilac, rhododendron. Now you're gone. An air of nostalgia wafts through your things as the rooms get cleared out one by one. It's a melancholy breeze, tender tug at my heart, much like the song a lone bird sang so clearly as we woke this day. What was all that he had to say? No one answering, a soliloquy from branch or wire into the morning mist. A prettiness, ephemeral, making its mark, then evanesced. "Mom, how will I remember you once the last fancy butter knife, glossy serving bowl, silver dancing shoe is gone, when even the window curtains are taken down? I'll remember the fullness of your song."
Daily Staples by Patrick Bradshaw, read by David Bannock. This was the second place winner in the Touchstone Ekphrastic Poetry Contest. It's after Leanne St. Laurent's photograph, Daily Staples. The signs and placards I sacrifice to the weather. No one ever pulls the Daily Staples that span the cracks, as if they are the only thing holding this skeleton together. Only these unyielding bones are left, rusting staples driven in at every angle. The creosoted wood poisoned against the rain, and the mysterious pink spot, Jupiter's bloodshot eye. There is no sign of the circus coming into town, that the lost cat was ever found, the stolen bicycle returned, that your candidate was reelected, or that your garage sale ever happened.
Sentries in the Sky by Beth Fox. After Bird Life by Emily Noel Lambert. They pretend to look the other way, yet they are always watching. Yes, they sleep with one eye open. And when they fly, one eye appraises your size, your rise to whatever defines your day. Birds memorize your every move, like the hummingbird that looks in my window when the feeder is low, and the chickadee who likes a sprig of my hair to make her nest. They are sky-wise, street-safe, tuned to their own base. If they had little cameras, they could go to protests, and if they were inclined, they could take photos of my license plate, add my name to the database of undesirables for a contrary cause. They have their own social media. No need to interview you for scorn, like Project Veritas. I swear, they know what you will do before you do. My avian friends, I watch you too. Eye you, even as you observe me. And every day, I envy your freedom, your ability to be in this moment, alive, right now, letting tomorrow take care of itself.
Optics, by Paul Guderzi Fry. This poem was an honorable mention in the Ekphrastic Poetry Contest. It's after the photograph, Peppermint Peony, by Elsa Volker. Meet me closer to the earth, where we may be free intruders in a softening landscape of freshly buddied teeth and silk. One luminous taste is all I need from you. Oh, pale valley, forgiveness finds another way. I am at war with all my days.
Grand Monadnock, an ekphrastic poem based on the painting Monadnock Crowned by Earl Schofield. The poem is by Gregory Reynolds. The treeless summit is like a bald pate, burned off to make it like a 4,000-footer with a four-way view. Grand indeed the windswept crown, for the most climbed mountain in the world, Thoreau and Emerson adored her classic ascent. Smooth and isolated, she stands above her peers, affording a sight of Bunker Hill's monument on a clear day when freedom's cost is remembered. This was a test mountain for my children. If you can climb this hill without complaint, then we're off to the whites. Freedom is not won easily, but fought for step by stony step, free to be what I was meant to be, with God's glory as my crown.
A Measure of Life and Love by Julia H. Fonte, read by Melissa Sprague. This poem was an honorable mention in our Ekphrastic Poetry Contest. It was written after a photograph called Taking Measure by Marjorie Moorhead. A dear friend who brings you dinner and visits each evening calls to tell me you haven't been feeling well. I call to check, but you cheerfully chat about how good you have it in your own home at 93, and I think that was purely by design, for you always had a vision, fashioning your future with a keen eye as you traveled new roads and visited old, keeping me close since the day I was born. Like a seamstress with 100 warm shades of coral, you piece together textiles of your tomorrows, measuring with perfection, pinning with precision. The masterpiece snipped a dreaded nursing home, but unforeseen pinpricks came with age, splitting stitched seams. Cancer trimmed some cloth at 90. Fickle knees altered your hip line at 92. You mended inch by inch, easing back into your plans. I sit here now, watching rain scatter across the pane, thinking how quickly everyday events can fray the finest silk, unseam the best tailored suit. and I wonder whether I'll be able to darn the hole that someday will be left by another thread unraveling from the soft fabric that has blanketed my life with love.
What the Sky Knows by Susan Birch, read by David Bannock. This poem was an Ekphrastic Poetry Contest honorable mention, and it's after The Countdown by Mark Eshbaugh. That missiles have been launched, that the sky is exploding, the earth is shaking, and there is no time, because it's the end of time. Not for fishermen in Japan or skiers in Switzerland, but here in Maryland, no time to run around and panic like the Pompeians. We have only zepto seconds to say, I love you, with our eyes. To think, why did we live here when we knew it was too close to D.C., the capital, the president? Too close. If a nuclear weapon was deployed, why did we stay, nestled in with our family, our friends, our neighborhoods, instead of getting out while we could? And all of that fear, that knowing, that regret, all of it swallows me in the blink of an eye, as that death mother always talked about catches me. Bunny paints a picture of suffering and pain by Mark de Carteret, read by David Bannock. This was an honorable mention in the Ekphrastic Poetry Contest. It's after Bunny paints a picture of suffering and pain by Luke Buffenmeyer. Bunny paints a picture of suffering and pain that spans the more unbearable precincts of our brains. And on the seventh day, appoints it God naps for what appears to be eternity in its purest state, or an asterisk trained in the art of false starts. So when we pan to his only son and some nonsense about spirits who'd trip on their own thoughts if they weren't aspiring to becoming hats, or being known as St. Peter, or Sunny, part impetuous leap, part restraint, back when you didn't so much paint as stain. Talk me down from this cloud, talk me down. Bunny, keeping what was left of his bones in a tin, and not those skulls, lucky him, one would think. So let's begin with a clean slate. Translation, no longer indebted to this onset of elements, those citrusy smells that come in a can, or the songs our hearts make when away from the camera. We have ears for no reason but to fuss with what's inferred by those wings we had grown to love, like, above, all everything else in a word, not the world. Palms Up by Martha Bufkin Kane, read by David Bannock. This poem won an honorable mention in the Ekphrastic Poetry Contest. It's after Black Drawings, number 1, by Luke Buffenmeyer. Blow it up and see what happens. It's a thing these days. And left behind, alone, are the hands. Palms up in prayer or supplication, or maybe just because they landed that way. Perry Doa with Raven's Beak and Inclinations by Leanne St. Laurent. This poem won an honorable mention in the Ekphrastic Poetry Contest. It's after Black Drawings, number 1, by Luke Buffenmeyer. Look again. X marks the spot where light enters X. The eye X cannot hold the blackbird in hand much X longer. I too stumble in the dark, X. I am inclined, X, to give meaning where there is none. Please, X, let this bird speak, X, before it disappears.
The Cauchy-Schwarz inequality doesn't account for love. After Black Drawings, number 1, by Luke Buffenmeyer, by Carla Schwartz. Bang me with me. Bang you with you. Square us together, belly to belly. We'll never be more than you and me. And you can look up The Cochise War's Inequality in Wikipedia. Enjoy.
Nautical Meanderings by Barbara Bald, read by David Bannock. This was a honorable mention in the Ekphrastic Poetry Contest. It's after Still Life, New Hampshire Shells by Cameron Bliss. Offer me a tray of shells. Be sure to include a quahog, some blue-black mussels, brown horse mussels, and fan-shaped scallops with fluted edges. Add some spiny dog whelks and striped periwinkles that, when alive, cling to rocks beneath undulating seaweeds. Please serve them up like a plate of delicacies, delicious memories hiding deep within their calciferous armoring. Let me see again the length of sandy beach, waves rolling up in rhythmic pulses. Allow me to feel the squish of silt between my toes while sidestepping sharp-edged shells. Help me hear the chime and tinkle of broken shards in the surf, gulls overhead punctuating the symphony. Perhaps I could once more hold the plastic pail I used as a kid to rinse grit from beach treasures or house filter-feeding sand crabs till my wonder began to wane. Take me again to my childhood home, a magical place filled with nautical treasures, fisherman's net draped behind the couch, oars my dad craft into a room divider, his oil painting on the back wall, the schooner heading out to sea. Let me hold, no, cradle, my mother's glass of pink and white shells, green and blue and amber sea glass, adding textured angles to its art. For sure, I will turn on the lamp Dad made from a ship's wooden pulley, finger lightly the mahogany steering wheel from his last boat, and gaze into the mirror he made from a brass porthole. If this is all too much to ask from a tray of shells, at least let me hold a giant pink-lined whelk to my ear till it whispers all the sounds I took for granted back then. Allow me to finger just one shell, maybe two, till I am full of nostalgia. Let me linger long enough to remember even the old hermit crab who taught me how to gracefully shed a shell when it no longer fits.
Seeking Center by Barbara Bald. They say it's like peeling an onion, layer after layer, hard to grasp an edge, each slippery scrim, one inside another, clinging to protect the center. You have to make a cut to start the process. Do you begin with a root, slice off what once held the bulb firm? Do you begin with its top, truncate its blossoming, cut short what seems to be greening with promise? Either way, tears puddle in someone's eyes, the letting go a painful loosening of every belief you labeled truth. Go deeper now, each peeling an exorcism. Let go of family, the church, friend who listened, the lover you thought could save you. Reaching the center is an inside job. Even the thinnest layer is made of cells that require delicate handling. And yes, like memory, the hint of what's missing will linger on every finger.
When a Tree Fell in the Forest by Russell Rowland. The tree in question tendered its nunc dimittis. Let thy servant depart in peace, for my roots have drunk deeply of the water table, while my branches lifted up nests to heaven to be blessed. The Great Spirit listened and said, depart in peace. It fell, and loud was the fall of it. Afterwards, moss spoke, forest floor's green overlay. We tried to soften the impact. Fledglings on the make announced, our hope is to find a tree as sheltering as the one our parents found for us. Pileateds, hairies, and downies remembered with gratitude many generous feedings. Sorry about the holes. A tiny mole strained to gaze upward without a neck. At last, I know what clouds look like. Saplings and seedlings assess the sunlight, now pouring down. One said, I believe we could thrive here.
Hi, this is Michael Brosnan. I'm reading from my poem, Refactoring. You rise to the new day unsettled. The night's news, a gateway to unknown dimensions. Your AI sensing your elevated blood pressure, the irregular heartbeat, pats your back with his hand open to spatula position, and again sings Van Morrison's Into the Mystic. Afterward, it brews coffee, a bit bitter and metallic, cooks scrambled eggs and toast, and asks you flatly what it feels like to dream and wake hungry.
This is Carlene M. Gadaby reading Women's History. Look at something new. Imagine it 10 or 20 years from now, buried under shifting piles of discarded things, some not even yours. Flannel shirts with missing buttons and cuffs frayed. Party dresses and fleece buntings, the child long grown and flown. Cracked face, wedding dress, yours. And shoes that no longer fit. Suddenly remember the things you've forgotten, hidden in a closet with no hangers, steeped in musty air that bakes dust into creases, makes room for moths. Consider a black wool sweater. Shake it out, slip it on. Soon enough, it will join old handbags and drape shapelessly from an iron hook, welcome companion to old coats and a neatly folded playpen. All things once valuable, venerable, vulnerable. Wear threadbare history wrapped around aching shoulders, years bending your frame. Pleasure comes in a cup of coffee with someone you love, or could love, given some time. This warmth lingers more than wool, but less than memory. All things outlive usefulness. The future stretches, grows thin. Hold a newborn baby, soft and sweet. Nuzzle her neck before some randy boy will. Breathe deeply. She smells of warm milk and baby dreams. Someday she may tell you her secret name, one that defies the gods and that will determine her fate. Like Cassandra, she will never be believed, but will spill truth like vinegar and ashes to men. Cuddle this girl child. Take joy in her becoming. She will grow older, maybe wiser, drive a car, burn meals, and lie to herself. Plant an apple tree and watch it take root. Its trunk will thicken and limbs will bend and reach. Pink and white petals will scatter on the crust of a late spring snow before honeybees can find the blossom depths. Rejoice in this lacy froth and pale perfume. There will be no harvest but these fallen flowers.
This is William Coleman, and this is a poem called Accepting the Invitation. Oh, to take the days I've lost in future worry and set them down before me now. I'd nearly think myself immortal. The vista would be that far-reaching, peopled with my people, whom I'd see anew. Books unread, history unrevisited, all before me now, a garment unfolded, arms open, seams not perfect, but holding, holding, and all I have to do is say yes. Let's wear this. Yes. Let's go out tonight.
After Moving Towards Home, by June Jordan, by Lorena Maria. I do not wish to speak to you of the home front, or the American assemblage of greed. Instead, the smoke-eyed bounty hunters, savaging their quarry through the strawberry fields. Witness the Arlington lines of the false prophet's army, the neighborhood boy and his tear-slick eyes memorizing the shape of his mother's vacant sandals. A reverie of glass confetti that butchers the cheek of a citizen mother. Behold the alien culling, each man a humble bead along an iron tether, industry of human exodus, stretching from the entrails of a for-profit purgatory. cast your eyes aloft the shattered cataclysm of believers, from cage to shining cage.
Reading by R.H. Russell. Friday in the Garden, soliloquy of tiny insects who speak as one, tired of sorting wheat from whatnot, Coreopsis from Creeping Charlie, shepherd's purse from flocks. A weed, we'd read, is but a plant, so plantain, so purslane, so sorrel, landing in the wrong plot. Japanese knotweed serves as naysay. Among splurge lurks amid garlic mustard. Invasive, yes, it's said, but so's the monarch, that flame-winged migrant, now bombarding marigolds and nasturtiums. Under color of the soul law its long journey obeys. One wonders why we weed out, not in, when this itinerant stranger seeks not carefully bred delphinium towers, but the wild spikes of succulent, uncultured milkweed.
The Neighborhood by Tom Laughlin, in response to Matt Carano's painting titled The Neighborhood. Afternoon sun greets the red chimney, warming it gently before rolling down the house's brown roof, stroking the shed's reddish roof to play in the asphalt courtyard. It peeks in a window, brushes up a tuft of green blades, a triangle of slow movement. An orange-chipped side door waits for the slope of evening rays. Two faded blue aluminum-sided rentals have had their fill and ready themselves for sleep, basking in cool shadow. There is a crack in the asphalt, considering a stretch. A feathery drape, two stories up, shyly watches, waiting.
Marion Schaefer, reading Holding Wood. Of course there are no chainsaws in a wedding, but men we choose in summer should be good for holding on to other ends of wood set aside, cut to fire length, shedding chips like hard confetti after freeze. They also must know how to hone the chain and cut where we don't reach to spare us pain bucking up the butts of tough old trees. Then we dare to hold our only hands close by when they saw, as partners should, knowing we will later walk the wood with them and talk of planting hardwood stands for longer, colder winters, once more showing purpose here, keeping fires going.
Exile by Allah Haki. You learn to walk again in a foreign land, despite an ocean between you and your knees, echoes of footprints abandoned in restive alleys reverberate through your bones. You learn to talk again in the forced language of Babylon, try hard not to lose the words that once made you whole, not to forget who you are. But time never heals the ache you feel in your missing toes, removes the clay clump in your mouth. Even in your dreams, you are a motherless child.
Magnolia by Shelley Rodrigue.
Magnolia. When my friend suggests confession as a substitute for therapy, I don't waste breath arguing. I look instead at ancestral trees, older than her god, like this magnolia. Its velvety tepals blooming larger than my palm, whiter than clouds. I want to be cupped like a beetle among the carpels, held through the night. when the sun casts the first glints of morning, I want to sit in the first hint of its shadow, where there is nothing but this tree, and nothing which its shade cannot absolve me.
Cell phone étouffée, a reimagining of Salvador Dali's Lobster Telephone by John Wessick. Peel and devein the cell phones, being careful to remove the lithium batteries. Chiffonade a handlebar mustache and set aside. Pluck a floating elephant from the clouds. Squeeze out the flammable hydrogen before bringing it indoors. Puree the elephant in batches in a food processor. The excess will keep for up to 6 months in your freezer. Melt 3 clocks in a frying pan. Add 3 tablespoons of ground elephant and whisk to combine. Continue whisking until the raw elephant smell is gone to make a roux. Toss in the holy trinity of burning giraffes, rhinoceros horns, and scaffolding. Sauté until softened and beginning to caramelize. Pour in a violin and simmer for 20 minutes until thickened. Add the cell phones and cook over medium until heated. Top with chiffonade and garnish with an apple, wearing a bowler hat.
Newcastle by Paul Godarzy Fry. Black water, drawn in frozen coils, abandoned the blacker rocks and flowed back to the ocean before the sun could taste it. And what did I hope to find? What could I warrant? Upon the silent cliff, I followed a man with his finger outstretched and his other hand wrapped around his son's shoulders as he extinguished a lighthouse. It ached. Of course it ached. It was temporary proof that I believed in worship, that power in the sky, that guiding fire. Dawning winds opened my palms and broke the headline. A song of breaking ice, the annihilation of reason. Flocking shorebirds cried out with such hunger. I held a wound, colored gold.
July by Craig Evanson, read by David Bannock. Susurrating trees, smiling in their rest, their dreams yours to inhale. In another fraction of a revolution, we'll all hear the faint approach of winter. Shorter days, a yellowing. But today, the world is telling herself to herself in a scented green fog. Cabbage whites, ruby throats, blown cottonwoods, fermenting blackberries, birdsong, fireflies, and a million secrets, pleasing herself in all her designs, including this spider, who for 20 minutes has been yo-yoing its brief self from a grape leaf.
Art Appreciation by Rebecca Mattson. I love men like I love paintings, my eyes dancing along the lines and through the colors, letting their emotions wash over me until I can feel the meaning of their birth. Men I keep encased in frames. I love women like I love poetry. Words I read again and again until they are tattooed upon my skin. Words that become life. They live and live and leap from their lines with limbs that wrap around me and lips that kiss my neck. Words I cannot trap upon the page.
Pool Cues by Krista McCormick, read by Melissa Sprague. My partner drinks a $7 beer, sucks down my taunts just as quick. He dresses like he wants something from me. Shiny black shoes, eyes dark like pockets you could sink right into. Buzzing with the hot hum of whiskey ballads, I let him break. The clack of the balls reminds me of teeth. We dance around the table, don't speak, but listen to the tension buzz above the music, the strings playing under the skin of his hands. His chain dangles, precision gold over green, raises the cue, casting shadow lines before he shoots. His performance is one of scrupulosity. He scratches anywhere you want, but it's got to be behind that dot. Brushes my fingers on the exchange, sweet as lemonade. I play along, pin my hips to the head rail, bend forward, eyes to the cue line, roll the ball slowly past the head spot, flick up my eyes to test his due scrutiny. He watches some scene at the bar with the far-gone vigilance of an easy prey animal. I shoot. Sunk.
Glass Jar, written and read by Veronica Tucker. On the windowsill, a jar holds what you could not throw away, the last match from a storm lantern, a feather, no bird will miss, two stones worn flat by water. Beside them, a button from a winter coat no longer in the closet, a rusted key with no remembered door, a ticket stub from a film you almost forgot you loved. Not clutter, but proof that even small things can anchor a life. Each time the light passes through the glass, it turns ordinary objects into a cathedral of colors, as if holiness was never elsewhere, only waiting to be noticed, and sometimes, at night, the jar itself becomes a lantern, catching the streetlight, shining with the memory of everything you chose to keep.
You never know the day nor the hour, by James Washington, Jr.
You never know the day nor the hour. Spoken like a preacher, my grandmother Esther, skin dark with praying mantis eyes, and she meant it. Jimmy, let me tell you. She was gifted with gospel drama. Glory be, Lord willing, the Blessed Father. Death came in her 90s. Its cousin introduced a few years before. Brain tangled in Gordian knots, thoughts popping every which way. Until that time at the nursing home, day and hour, a subtle whistle away. She was shriveled into herself by then. I knelt at her wheelchair, kissed her grayed head, gentle spoke with an anvil heart. Goodbye, I said, not knowing if she could hear or understand. Don't say goodbye, she said. Jimmy, say so long.
You've been listening to the audio edition of Touchstone from the Poetry Society of New Hampshire. You can subscribe to Touchstone at psnh.org.